Extra, extra, extra. Welcome to Revolutionary Podcast Utena, where one kind of expert and one total newbie watch Revolutionary Girl Utena and talk about it for your enjoyment. Hi, I'm Randy.
And I am Jared.
Jared, it's been a couple of weeks. What's new with you?
So many things. In the real world timeline, as we like to call it, the Cowboy Bebop on Netflix just came out. So watching lots of anime related materials out there, having some good time. So marathoned all 10 episodes of Cowboy Bebop. That was a lot of fun yesterday. Quite a long day, but very fun. What have you been up to?
Oh, just the usual this and that. Finally got into a show called Ted Lasso that everybody seemed to say was great. And I guess they're not wrong, because I've blown through like 8 episodes in the last 2 days, which is a lot for me. I don't tend to marathon a lot of things. And then also recently started playing Yakuza Kiwami, because my 2021 New Year's resolution was to finally play a Yakuza game. So here in November, decided to finally give it a go.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's good. But that's good to hear. We can also talk about what we're really here for today, which is, do you know what show it is we talk about, Jared?
This is not the Dragon Ball podcast.
No, this is not my Dragon Ball podcast.
This is the Utena podcast.
Right, exactly. We're going to be going through the whole show and film. As we go through, we'll talk about things. There will be spoilers, so if you're listening to a later episode, but you're only at the start of the show, stop, go back, and watch the show, and then come back. But we're not going to talk about any spoilers for things after the episodes we're talking about. That's how linear time works. if you'd like to watch the show with us, luckily, there are a bevy of options. You can watch it all for free on Nozomi Entertainment's YouTube page. They have the entire show. They don't have the movie. It's going to be the same situation on Funimation Now, and now Crunchyroll has the show, but not the movie. So you can go and see that. Otherwise, you can pick up the Blu-rays or the DVDs of the show from Nozomi Entertainment on Right Stuff, Amazon, wherever you want to pick up your anime.
Right. If you're really cool, you could just go collect like a whole set of cells and put the whole show together yourself.
Exactly. You know? Buy them in the correct order and then just lay them all out and just kind of scan over it.
See what happens. I mean, good luck to you. And also, I'm happy that you are a millionaire to buy all of those cells. So congratulations.
Yeah, way to go. You certainly made it in life, or you've got that kind of cash to blow.
Now, Randy, I am a little disappointed. I thought we were going to talk Dragon Ball, because I saw the coolest artwork today, and
well, it wasn't mine, so it couldn't be that cool.
Yeah, you're right. It was one level below yours.
There we go.
It was different villains and their perspective as they were being killed by Goku or Gohan.
Oh, yes.
That was cool. So everyone, you check out our Twitters, because I know that I shared it.
I believe I did too, which might be why you saw it.
Oh, that's probably why I saw it. Isn't this funny how the world just goes round, and then suddenly we were watching Utena together, and everything's related to Dragon Ball somehow?
Somehow. It all kind of works out. So this episode of the show, we're going to be talking about 2 episodes of Revolutionary Girl Utena. Now, the last couple of ones we've done, we've covered episodes 1 through 5. This episode, weirdly, we're going to do episode 8 and then 7. I know that's probably super weird, but there's a reason.
I think that's how I played Final Fantasy, was like episode 8 first, and then I played 7, and then I played 9. I'm not sure about you, but
Similar. Well, I did 8 first. Yeah, I did 8 first, and then 7, and then 9, and then 10. Then it goes on, and it gets real weird after that.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't throw this podcast off too far.
That's okay.
Episode 8.
Yeah, it's so the reason being is that there was some production issues. So they aired episode 8 and then 7. They aired them kind of out of order. So what we're going to be watching is episode 8 that aired in aired order, but episode 6 in proper production order. So kind of weird. But episode 8, quote unquote, is called Curried High Trip, that aired May 21st, 1997. And Jared, would you do me a favor and tell me what happened in this episode?
Definitely. So somehow, Anthy's curry and rice explodes, and that shock switches Utena and Anthy's personalities. Now Utena is feminine, while Anthy is tomboyish. The cause of the incident seems to be Nanami's practical joke, trying to mix in the curry of the 100 times curry, an Indian specialty hot enough to make you breathe fire, quotation marks, which has mistakenly been replaced with the, quote, super spicy 900 billion X curry, so hot it will blast you to smithereens and make phantom elephants trumpet loudly. Can't make that one up. Scolded by her brother, Nanami flees to India. I think this is flies, but she flees. It doesn't matter. She's fleeing all the way through this episode to obtain more of the same curry spice.
That's right.
What an episode that was.
Oh, what a trip. Just to go
literally
through.
Literally. Yeah. India.
To go through who is behind this episode, it was storyboarded by Satoshi Nishimura, who worked on Bleach and Golden Kamuy and Sailor Moon. It was directed by Akihiko Nishiyama, who worked on City Hunter and Golden Boy.
Lots of Goldens.
Yeah, lots of Goldens. Yeah. Didn't think about that. I was cherry picking things of like things I know, so hopefully somebody else knows.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Ryota Yamaguchi, who did Cowboy Bebop, the original, not the new Netflix live action one.
Huh.
Great Teacher Onizuka, Kanon, Ranma One Half, and the Escaflowne movie.
Hmm.
And it was animation supervisor by Akemi Hayashi, who works on Rebuild of Evangelion, did Gunbuster, Gurren Lagann, and Ouran High Host Club.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Golden Kamuy? Have you ever seen any of that?
I've never seen it, but I've heard good things.
I believe I saw some of that earlier, like very early this year. Just wanted to throw it out there for all the Golden Kamuy fans out there that I did see some of that.
Is it over? Is it still ongoing? I don't know.
You know, what we have to do in real-time podcasting nowadays is make sure that I'm talking about the right series. And
sure.
I am.
Good.
Yes, Golden Kamuy. It's over. It's finished. I don't know if, I believe there's like a manga. I don't know if anything's been continuing or if there's different sets of things. But it's a very interesting series. I saw like about 12 to 14 episodes in a sitting, I believe. Did not finish it, but it's very different than like other series I've seen out there. For people who've seen it, I think they'll know what the vibe is. But yeah, it's totally interesting.
Yeah.
Like, definitely kept me on my feet as I kept watching it, so.
I want to go through just some quick director's commentary here, and then we'll actually get into talking about the meat of this episode, or the curry episode, as it were.
Oh, man. Curry with, like, what's your favorite curry? Are we talking, like, chicken, pork, like, pork cutlet? Are we talking about, like, regular curry? Like,
I suppose maybe standard. I haven't had too much exposure, unfortunately.
It's okay. We need to get you some tonkatsu.
Okay, let's do it.
Katsu curry. Oh, my God.
It is before dinner for me, so this is slightly painful to do.
Oh, man, curry. Okay.
From the pen of Ikuhara himself, here's what he had to say about episode that we watched. This was originally planned as episode 6. We'd originally contracted an outside studio to do it, but a few days before ADR was supposed to start, it became clear that virtually none of the production was done. We hurriedly swapped it with episode 8, which was broadcast episode 6, in the schedule. The whole series of knockabout insanity that got bandied back and forth there was traumatically intense. I don't want to assign blame and try anyone in absentia here, so I won't say any more about it. But if you were to ask me whether I hate the episode because of that fuss, I'd say no, not really. In fact, there are many parts of it that I'm quite fond of. I think the colossal effort the staff put in with their backs against the wall like that sublimated the episode's cheapness into solid humor. The scene when our heroines' daily lives with their switched personalities are strung together with snapshots. I've thought for a long time that the audio mix was kind of thin here, but in this 5.1 remaster, it's finally got nice, lively sound. Which reminds me, what had me worried during production was this episode's climax. Which scene is the climactic one? I agonized. Looking back on it now, maybe it was the part where Nanami slipped on the banana peel?
That's quite a thing for an episode to be delivered late and then you realize nothing was actually really worked on at all by a contracted studio.
Yeah, yikes.
Yikes. If anyone's ever seen like Shirobako, like that happens in that series, and it's quite a sight to see how people have to scramble.
Oh yeah, it's got to be really rough to try and, you know, catch up to all of that, or pull up the slack that probably wasn't your fault in the beginning.
No, and it's also like that core issue of communication too. Like, you expect the studio to deliver the assets, and then not to have much done is just so unfortunate. Mm-hmm. A lot of money on the line. A lot of producers behind anime. So
there was a lot of trouble making this episode, but let's talk about what we thought about it as it came to be. So clearly this episode was more heavy on the humor rather than dealing with the story or the themes of the show.
Yeah. It was a very different type of episode. It had a filler type of a feel, but it was a fun, high-paced filler.
So, yes.
I actually have some notes that I took for this episode.
Yes, please do. I'm sure they'll be just as funny to talk about as it was to watch.
Right. I mean, I didn't even take any notes on exploding curry because I just assumed that Anthony and Utena would be fine, right? And yes, they were fine, but like my first note for this episode was more slapping. Anthony slaps back in capital letters because Anthony never slaps back, right?
No. Never.
For some reason she gets slapped every single episode, which is honestly like a huge problem. And it doesn't stop ever. But she slapped back this time, and I was thinking, whoa, that was new. And then I wrote, I want curry now. And that's when I realized that Anthony and Utena traded personalities because of the explosion of the curries. Then I wrote, elephants everywhere. And Sionji, he makes moves on Anthony, who is Utena in Anthony's body. So it doesn't really go very well because there's a diary exchange involved. We thought that Sionji was going to be taking off his clothes. And it was very, very scandalous, like that other episode with the piano.
Right.
And there was clothes being buttoned up. But no. It just turns out he keeps his diary
under his shirt,
near his breast. And so it just so happens that apparently, like, Anthony and Sionji were, like, trading diaries and writing things. Utena gives that diary back. And she wrote some things like hentai baka and other things or something. And then I wrote curry. Because there's more curry. That's all this episode is. It's curry and elephants. That's all you really have to know.
One thing that was very funny is that the episode starts with the cruel prank that Nanami pulls to make the curry explode. And then we get the very serious student council, and they bring up that they've gotten a letter from End of the World bringing up that Anthony and Utena have been hurt, and they may not survive. So it's clear that all of this goofiness is still being watched by this mysterious entity who is...
Yeah, like, the most important asset, like, I hate to call her an asset, but Anthony is, like, the most important thing in this whole show.
Mm-hmm.
That's very clear so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they learn, okay, well, they're fine, except, and then, yeah, they're switched. I am used to watching the show quite a bit. In Japanese. So the second that, who was it? One of them spoke first. I'm like,
right.
That's the wrong voice coming out of that person's mouth. I'm like, oh, that's right. They switched bodies.
I couldn't tell at first, but I was thinking, why does Utena look so different? Like, she looks so mature.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized it very shortly after that.
Oh, it's so good. And we have, you said it while we were watching it, but you don't have it in your notes that this is the earliest we get the puppetry girls, because when Nanami sets off to India to go get the spice, we cut to them talking about how there's a theory of divine justice. Basically, karma. Mm-hmm. If you do something bad, you will get bad consequences, which is Nanami decided to pull this prank. So she goes to India, where every single time she's going to be trampled or attacked by these elephants, whether they're the phantom elephants that trumpet and things like that are you know, up in the air. But she's haunted by these elephants at every turn.
It was quite entertaining to see.
Did you see them surfing?
I saw them surfing, and I don't think they're on surfboards. Were they on like magic carpets? It was so confusing, but it was amazing.
Oh gosh, I was laughing so hard here and there. Just poor Nanami, and Sionji putting the moves on Utena, who he thought was Anthony.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it while it's a filler episode, it definitely had its moments. I think it was handled really well. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so fast-paced. And then, I mean, I'm so happy that, like, whatever animator they chose for the elephants, like, they must really like elephants. And, you mm-hmm. know, it's either that or they hated elephants and they really just had to do their job and animate them. But, mm-hmm. you know, there was a lot of elephants in this episode.
So, you had said something while we were watching this, and mm-hmm. I want to explore it a little bit without going into a lot. You had said that you hate Nanami and you wish she would go away. tell me sorry. Your thoughts on Nanami. I'm not Nanami. You don't have to apologize to me.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe Nanami is a fan favorite that I don't know about for some reason. they write her, the series, the creators have written her to be such a easily dislikable character.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like her eyes, like the way they animate her eyes and being devious. She has that weird laugh. She just kind of feels like a unnecessary character. Although, if I might be mistaken here, but we watch the opening theme every episode.
Yes.
And I feel like she's in the opening. I feel like she was dueling, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because sometimes you just don't notice those things. You'll see the same opening over and over again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like Nanami was in it. So I'm wondering if she's going to have a more serious role in the future. And I still don't understand the stuff with her brother, her infatuation with him. And mm-hmm. I guess you could say that they've done a good job of writing her as so dislikable.
Yes.
But I don't find much quality. Like, I need like a backstory episode for her because I don't feel very connected to her at all. I mean, she has a lot of screen time, but I don't understand her motives beyond the surface. I wish there was a little more.
Right.
But yeah. But if she tragically disappeared, I don't think I'd be too upset right now.
That's fair. I don't want to speak to anything that happens later, but I think from my perspective, she is a character that is made for you to love to hate. So that anytime she shows up, it's like, oh, she's going to do something so devious and I'm going to just absolutely hate what she does. She'll do something like that. And then karma will come around and smack her right back so hard. And it's that, I think that is the part that I really enjoy, because so far, every time she's trying to do something terrible, it's backfired on her so incredibly that it's kind of like, ha ha, take that every time. So yeah, I can understand just stopping at that first part of like, she's just incredibly unlikable. Like, yeah, so far I get it. I just wanted to hear if you felt like there was any redemptive part to her existence at all, or if it was
not yet.
Okay.
No, the only redemption she has given me any episode so far is the curry, because real curry that's not just made out of like the curry bouillon cube blocks. Mm-hmm. I'm talking like real, the heart and soul of Japanese curry is so good. It tastes so amazing. That's all I thought about with this episode. And I thought the elephants were funny. but other than that, that's kind of like what that episode exists for. There was a reference here. I wrote this down.
Okay.
When they were talking about the diary, the next scene referenced the code of the rose seal. And I'm not 100% sure, like, what was going on in that reference, like, going against the code of the rose seal or what it was, if you remember, but they quickly shifted in reference to the code of the rose seal, and I was testing my brain. I kind of gave it, like, a pop quiz, like, do I know the code of the rose seal? Is this, like, the thing that they quote every episode about breaking the world's egg and this and that? But, yeah, there was a reference to the code of the rose seal again.
I guess I'm not entirely too sure.
I don't know. I feel like that was the only part of this episode that connected it back to the real world of Utena instead of this filler. But
right.
Yeah.
Oh, I've forgotten one of the earlier parts after they had switched their bodies of the two of Nanami's friends have been snapping pictures of Utena and Anthy and their unusual personalities and selling photos of them. First of all, doing that against unconsensually, not great, but
yeah.
It's just at least we got some time with Mickey, who is like, oh, this is utterly terrible. I've bought 20 photos. It's like, this is poor boy. It's poor mess of a boy.
Yeah, this poor mess of a boy who had like a two-parter episode and seemed to be making friends with them. And then the personality didn't really carry over into this episode. So
no.
What I wanted to say, though, was that picture. I kind of forgot about the pictures, the Polaroids that you had brought mm-hmm. up. What is it with anime and having so many characters who are in high school? Typically, it's usually boys mm-hmm. Taking photos of typically female characters and selling them like in school. Like, is this like an actual thing that happens in Japan? And it happens in so many anime episodes, or is it right. just another anime trope? That's what I wonder.
Yeah. As a person who's not experienced the high school experience in Japan, I guess I can't know. Oh. I would have to talk to people.
Everything you've ever told me has been a lie, because I thought you were...
I lived in anime.
Yeah. I thought you just lived in Japan your whole life and you grew up...
Oh, sumimasen.
That's the only word you need to know in Japanese. Is the, I call it the way of the sumimasen.
Oh, wait. That was excuse me. I should have said, oh, gomennasai, which is
that's
sorry.
The same thing. It also means sorry.
That's true.
It means I need some water or a beer. It means sorry I bumped into you. Sorry I told you I lived in Japan and knew about the high school life of taking photos.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. But
that's okay. I mean, how much would you charge for a picture of Utena or Anthy?
I don't want to, like, they're underage, and also I don't think it's cool to take photos of people like that.
So you're saying you would be the person, you'd be the character who would take those photos and rip them in half.
That's right. Absolutely.
You would destroy those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I would. You would be Choo-Choo, and you would eat them.
Yeah, because Choo-Choo will eat anything.
You are the
poison.
Moral that we need, the moral character in Utena.
There we go.
The moral grounding. Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to talk about the curry episode before we move on?
No, I just want curry.
Oh, as somebody who is minutes away from dinner and having some steak, I agree. I'm very
hamburger
hungry.
Steak is another good Japanese meal. Mm. Okay.
Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk about episode 7, which is still the actual episode 7. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and this time we're talking about Episode 7, Unfulfilled Jury, which aired on May 14th, 1997. Jared, would you be so kind as to tell me what happened in this episode?
Sure. Jury believes that there are no miracles. In the past, she secretly loved someone, but she couldn't win that person's heart. She thinks if there were miracles, she could have achieved her love. One day, Jury talks with Utena, and she gets enraged by Utena's words that she believes in miracles for the destiny between her prince and herself. Jury challenges Utena to a duel and tells her to show that there are miracles by defeating Jury by a miracle.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, the power of miracles.
The crew behind this episode, I think, is pretty interesting. First up, this episode was storyboarded by Mamoru Hosoda. Do you know who that is? Have you heard of him before?
Mamoru Hosoda.
Yeah.
Let me think here. The anime mind. Oh, the girl who leapt through time. Mm-hmm. The boy and the beast. Mm-hmm. Wolf children. Mm-hmm. Belle. And mm-hmm. what's that one with the dog? And,
That one with the dog.
It was the last one that came out before Belle. It's on Netflix. Everyone go search Mamoru Hosoda on Netflix. You'll find it.
We also can't forget One Piece movie number 6 and the second Digimon movie, which is called Our yes. War Game.
Summer Games.
Summer Wars.
Summer Wars. Squid Game. Summer Wars. Too many games and wars and hungers. Oh,
he didn't do Squid Game.
He probably watched it.
Probably. But yeah, he's kind of a big deal now, especially. But this is a look back at his past, where he storyboarded an episode of Utena in 1997. The episode was directed by Yukio Okazaki, who did Bakugan, Death Note, and Hellsing Ultimate. This episode was written by Yoji Enokido, which I didn't bring up when we were talking about episode 8, that this entire show has been written by him, by Enokido, up until episode 8, where it was done by Ryota Yamaguchi. So interesting that we in that subbing out the episode to a different studio, that they also changed writers, including that. And this episode was animated by animation supervisor by Akemi Hayashi, who has done some other stuff. She worked on Rebuild of Evangelion, Gunbuster, Gurren Lagann, and Ouran High Host Club.
I'm still caught up on Hosoda. I've been Wikipediaing them. that film I couldn't remember is called Mirai.
Oh, yes, yes. Mirai. That's not so much with the dog. That's with the baby.
There's a baby, but there's a dog in it.
Well, barely.
I could, whatever. It's not in it. Wolf Children.
That's true.
But I'm just so excited because in January of next year, in 2022, they are going to release Belle in theaters.
Yes.
G-Kids. We're not sponsored to talk about this, but I do feel like Hosoda's... This whole episode felt very different than the other episodes. And I think it was like a powerhouse team of creative influencers who worked on this project, including some of the storyboarding. Like, it felt very different.
I want to read out the director commentary from Ikuhara for it before we jump in. He says, "This story came together quickly as a story about relationships. He and she only appear within Juri's memories. The ending in the final script is different than it was in the first draft. The end game is still about getting a better idea of who Juri really is. That didn't change. But the first draft ended on a could it be sort of a note, and the script was finalized. I decided to come right out and say she was in love with a girl. Juri's story is a metaphor of unrequited love. If you watch it from that perspective, I think it's an easy one for anybody to understand. Shiori's design referenced the heroine of Miss Chiho Saito's short manga, Himegoto no Natsu. It's about a brother and sister entering a forbidden relationship. I enjoyed the total mismatch between the heroine's sweet prettiness and the story's bold development. I think we borrowed her looks because we wanted to hide something behind prettiness." So, as we were watching Juri, we get some flashbacks from her before everything happened. There was a sort of three-person, I don't want to say relationship at the start. They were just seemed to be friends.
It seemed like it was a love triangle.
Right. Between
it was shown to us as a very familiar love triangle.
And the other girl mentions to the boy, "Hey, I heard that Juri has a crush on somebody and it's not you." To which he has a very sad reaction to. But then it's very clear that this other girl swooped in and was like, "Oh, but I do." And they start dating. And this other girl and Juri exchange letters. She even sends one saying, like, "I did that thing and I don't regret it. Because we're happy, and that's just how it is." So it's got to be very rough for Juri. There's one thought that I had that kind of ruined things for me of Juri talking about, "We were so happy in those old days and things." And I'm like, you guys are 15. The old days are probably 6 months ago. But still,
yeah, like, I mean, it's funny like how time moves when you are young.
Yes.
And how it feels like you have so much more time than you actually do. But yes, it's like, just leave it, even with the piano episodes with, was it Miki?
Yep.
It's just like, when we were playing piano together, at least that was when they were young, like they were really little, but imagine if it was like 6 days ago, we were playing piano together and this tragedy struck where I couldn't make it to the recital. No, but at least like there was a time difference there, where with this, yeah, they didn't really look any different. Although, I will say, I feel like they went above and beyond with like the characters and how they looked in this. The purple-haired girl who was a part of that love triangle, she was like, came off as, you know, fairly pretty. I think they did that on purpose to be attractive to the young, dashing man who took his fencing mask off to reveal his beauty. I did not take that down as a note. I just recited it from memory.
Oh, it's very impressive.
Wow. But even Juri, I mean, yeah, I mean, they're young, but they kind of like animated her to be very mature, like older than,
you know,
than you would expect. She has such a different vibe than the other characters on the student council. That's for sure.
Yeah, big time.
Mm-hmm.
She does come off as very mature and put together. And I think that was a good way to hide like her, you know, anger and things that she would suddenly pop out to, of being upset at Utena.
Yeah, speaking of anger, my notes this time are not as fun, but I do have a note here that says, "More slapping! Jesus!" Because it was just so surprising. Yeah. There was more slapping in this episode.
Can never have enough.
Yes.
The slap, though, this episode, I'm trying to remember, was that somebody slapping Anthy? I don't believe it.
Probably, because she gets slapped every episode. Right, I think Anthy was giving her the orange flower, and she said there was a particular line that Jewelry uses that I can't quite remember, but Anthy's just trying to be a nice person to give her a flower and you know, fill the void in Jewelry's heart, but Jewelry's like, no, I must make this miracle myself, whatever miracle I'm referencing.
Yeah, it's we've got to have our required Anthy slap, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so far I think that's everybody in the student council except for Miki. I don't suppose Toga has done it yet either. Oh boy. I mean, the likelihood is high that he probably will. I can't remember if he does or not.
So many people slap her, and it's just so weird that every episode it happens. And it's like, why is this such a thing? I mean, is that the most wild thing that could happen, you know, to this character at the time? I mean, it's so it's like they do a slap to signify this like weird upper class vibe of like the student council. Like, I'm not going to punch you in this duel or around this atmosphere of a duel. I'll just slap you.
Right.
It's just strange because they all are vying for her power. Like, the whole point. And I guess I can lead into this here is the whole point of getting like Anthy to be your bride is that apparently it gives you power to revolutionize the world. And I, you know, put this in here as a line that for Jewelry is to disprove the power of miracles, also known as Jewelry and the power of love. it's just like every person has their own use for Anthy, which is why I feel like Anthy doesn't come off to usually have that much personality. She seems like she's just like an item of value to them. So, but it sucks to see them like abuse her physically.
Right.
And I mean, probably emotionally in some level, but it's always just like slapping her, even though they want her power. So what's up with that?
Right. It is. I was just going to bring that up. The fact that they all desire to be engaged to her, but have no problem with abusing her. It is a very strange dynamic. And yeah, I suppose they do just see her not as a person, but more as property that they're allowed to do with whatever they want. So I think that's an interesting thing to keep in mind as we continue watching the show.
I mean, it's all like end of the world's fault because this entity, he or she, they are sending these letters down to the student council. And there was even like a really interesting chart that in the version we were watching.
Yes.
I don't believe that they were the names are translated, but it was just showing the duels and how it was required that the next duel had to take place sometime shortly or within the week. So it's like I'm not really sure if it predicted that Jewelry would be the one in the duel or if it was somebody else, but that a duel had to take place.
I believe they said that it had to be somebody new. So it was either going to be Jewelry or Toga, to which I believe Miki brings up. But Jewelry has no motivation to fight Utena, so why would it be her turn next?
Yeah. But we did get that decent scene in the school hallway where it was Jewelry and Utena, and you can't forget Choo Choo was there.
Of course.
But they have that discussion in the hallway. If anything, what I got out of that scene was that Utena is starting to ask questions about the student council and taking things seriously. Like, she's actually saying things like, "You actually believe that there's some power behind Anthy," or she's questioning the student council more than she has before.
Right. Rather than just accepting it and being like, "Huh, that's weird." She's talking to these people on the student council to try and understand more of what's going on, but still kind of with like an aloof, whatever attitude about it. It's more of idle curiosity rather than serious curiosity, but you know, baby steps.
Yeah, this episode felt more layered than some of the other ones we've received, because you got these layers between Utena and Juri revealing just more inquiry behind Utena, and like her actually showing some further attention to it. They talk about the prince again. They discuss, like, there's Juri's entire saga of what's happening that we have to piece together, because it doesn't really make much sense until we get all the way throughout to the end of the episode.
I also wanted to bring up, is I think, a very good showing of what Utena values, because obviously she cares about justice and wanting to make sure that Anthy is treated properly. But when Juri sort of attacks her in the night, demanding that she get rid of that ring because of she finds Utena's nobility insulting. Utena fights for her life to keep that ring on her finger and, like, will kick Juri off and just is, like, clutching it around her hand afterwards. Like, it is the most important thing in the world because it's her only bond to that prince that saved her when she was younger. You know, I really enjoyed that because, you know, we've had a lot of Utena being aloof and sort of whatever and blasé about things. So then to see, like, okay, this is definitely something she deeply cares about, equally as much as what Juri cares about in proving that miracles don't exist. I just thought that was very, very interesting. And if you don't mind, I also wanted to talk about the duel itself, because she does challenge her to a duel to not so much to take Anthy herself, but also to prove to Utena that believing in miracles is stupid.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, there was pieces of that kind of went over my head as we were watching this whole episode. The discussions about miracles and everything related to it, it wasn't really coming together for me until the very last few minutes of the episode. Yeah, the duel happened. I mean, we should definitely give a shout out to the animation of going up to the platform and playing. Calamity Destiny? What is it called?
Absolute Destiny Apocalypse.
Oh, Calamity Destiny sounds about right. Well, that's like a metaphor for today's day and age.
Right.
but as things, you know, they use that animation again, and, you know, something epic's about to happen. You know, we saw the power of Dios once again, but the duel was really well animated. It was more serious. This definitely went along with how this episode went. I mean, look at how much we've had to say about this episode versus the episode about Curry, right? Like,
right.
Curry was fun to watch, but this one had just so much, like I was saying, like there was so many layers between just some actual development of Utena and curiosity of, like, what's going on a little bit. And Juri, I think, was more well written than some of the other characters that I haven't cared as much about. Juri definitely seemed to be more interesting and kept me going until the end of the episode. So.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And yeah, that animation was quite standout. I know that in our previous fights, we fought Mickey, who is no slouch when it comes to sword fighting. At the start, we had Sion-ji, who is head of the kendo club at school. But every time we've seen Juri, she, like, outside of the student council, she is fencing. So it's very clear that she is a well-practiced swordswoman. And the fight definitely echoed that, because Utena is just stumbling everywhere, and Juri always has the upper hand and is taunting her. She even moves in, not even to stab at the sword, but gets the sword right up into Utena's face. And it's like, oh, we can keep going for another round. I don't want to end this yet.
It's too bad that the stakes weren't risen and she didn't give her, like, a scar or something. That would have been interesting.
Right. But then Utena charges with the power of Dios, where we see it kind of strobe between her and the prince, and she goes in to stab at Juri's rose, and then just as it's inches away, Juri deflects her sword and flings it out of her hand, and we're like, okay, well, she's won, and she moves in, gives one last taunt with the sword pointed at her rose before, uh-oh, that sword she hit out of her hand before comes falling down straight and slices the rose right off of Juri's chest.
Yes.
Nothing more than a miracle that could have done something like that.
But we have to remember, in the animation before that, right? Mm-hmm. I believe it's right before that, Utena is doing the lunge forward, but right before the lunge forward that we usually see in the opening animation,
yes,
they quickly flashed between Utena and what seemed to have been the prince. Mm-hmm. So as there was like these references of miracles or whatever was happening in the aura of the battle, that happened really quickly. That was very interesting.
Right.
I don't know if we had seen that before. Where
it's usually been the bank animation of the prince's spirit descending from the castle above and inhabiting her body. Okay. So this is definitely a new way of illustrating this sort of surge in power she's getting.
Yeah, so there's something there, somehow, some way, that happened. And then the miracle with the sword falling from the sky, perfectly. That was, yes. That was surprising. It was really well done.
Yeah, without harming her even, which had to have been difficult.
Not even a thread of hair was cut from her scalp.
Nope. So that's that. She lost, and Utena continues to be engaged to Anthy. And then we have Toga and Juri having another conversation about miracles before we see Juri take out that locket that she had, flash back to the photo of her and those classmates that she was friends with, and somebody has cut
reveal.
Out. Right. Yes. She opens the locket, and it is not the boy that they were fighting over, but rather the purple-haired girl from before, which... You know, definitely solidified things for you because it was, you know, you had brought up like, this is kind of going over my head. But then the moment that happened, you kind of exclaimed of, oh, okay.
Well, you have to. So the student council has constantly repeated, like every single episode, I believe so far, that, you know, break the world shell and gain revolutionary power and et cetera, et cetera. But we haven't really seen what this revolutionary power is. We don't know what it can do. I've had some interest, like, I think they're interesting theories or just silly theories sometimes about what this power is or what it could really do. But this episode finally painted a visual of what maybe this power could do, because when we learned that Juri wasn't, like, you know, in love with the guy, she was actually in love with the purple-haired girl. And who loved the guy. So the girl, like, she's in love with the guy, or, you know, and I believe they imply that they're still going strong. So
yes,
Juri, she's out. Like, there's no way she's going to be able to kokuhaku confess and basically win this girl's heart, probably. But she wants the revolutionary power to change the world, to change who the girl loves. So basically make a miracle happen to change the purple-haired girl's feelings towards her. Now that is that's a lot of power. Like, that's usually something's, you know, usually when you have like an episode of anime or like an arc in an anime where something like that happens, like something just goes wrong, like you can't successfully do that. But I wonder if like the power involved with Anthy and this revolutionary power to change the world, I wonder if it's actually enough to make something like that happen. But we don't know. I mean, it's not really told to us yet.
No, but it's definitely something to keep in mind that I'm not sure if even the student council knows what the power is to means to revolutionize the world, but they definitely have their dreams and their desires that they hope that it could achieve.
Sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I wonder if Juri changed her mind about miracles because she was upset because she was told to by the purple-haired girl that you should believe in them. But Juri thinks that if miracles did exist, then you would know that I love you and you would love me back. But because it's unrequited love, she's like, well, then clearly these miracles don't exist because the thing that I want hasn't happened. So she's going to fight to force it to happen, which is
right.
Very interesting, very neat character development that seems to be, I mean, everybody's is kind of selfish and hers definitely is, but like, I don't know, it seems more of a pure selfishness than anything else.
But if you were to question me, like give me a pop quiz on, let's see if I can do this. There's Toga, Sionji, Miki, and obviously Juri.
Yes.
And then you have the sisters at Minami. Mm-hmm. You have all of these characters.
Sorry, Nanami.
Nanami. if you were to give me a pop quiz on their different, like, what drives them for this revolutionary power, like Toga, couldn't quite say. Sionji, all we know is he wants the rose bride. Anthy, that's all I can put together. You've got Miki. Miki was actually had like writing involved with him where he was trying to find that sound again. Mm-hmm. So he wanted like the instant satisfaction of having that happen with Anthy and like the piano. Mm-hmm. But when you look at like Juri's is more drawn out and more just more written. And maybe it's because I'm a sucker for like, you know, romantic anime and love triangles and stuff like that. But it just seemed more personable as a story about love, as you were talking about. A story about relationships, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So it's just that's where I'm coming from with this, is it just seemed like it was the stakes were a bit higher finally. But like the essence of the overall show has like the stakes being pretty high. But there hasn't been too many things that make it feel like we should really believe that the stakes are high. Mm-hmm. Because Utena, as a main character, doesn't really seem to see what's really going on. But she's directly involved. So, you know, the student council is like, up there like almost in their own tower in a way.
Right.
Discussing, you know, end of world and the letters and these events that must happen to break the world's shell. But they don't really discuss that, like, what happens if they don't get the Rose Bride? Like, you know, what happens if they don't get Anthy and it's just Utena that has Anthy, right?
Right.
Like, so when is the switch going to happen where it gets really serious? But this episode felt the most serious to me so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm excited to see, you know, well, I've seen it. I know how things go, but I'm excited to see how it develops and how your interpretations of those things.
Sure.
Not a lot happened in these two episodes that really address any of your prior predictions.
No.
And I'm not sure, do you have anything else you would like to throw out there to revisit, later on? Particularly, I suppose, from the Juri episode. I doubt the Nanami one could give you a lot to go on.
Well, with, you're right. I mean, the Curry episode only had so much. This episode with Juri, I mean, I know I left with Miki, I left off with that. Miki might try to dismantle the student council because he doesn't really seem to care much about that. Juri, I feel like if anything that the stakes are now higher. I don't really have a new overall prediction unless you want to pull something from that. But the if I had any new prediction, it's that there's definitely a power to change the world.
Mm. You believe it's true.
I believe that there is something behind it. But, you know, I don't have many theories, except I am curious about the prince. I know that there's been this allusion to the prince being possibly spiritually inhabiting Utena or having actually appeared before her in the past and giving her power. But this time there was a juxtaposition that they flashed those frames of animation really quickly with the prince. And I'm wondering, like, there's always this, like, weird puppetry, like, pulling the strings. Like, is this someone's just, like, childish game? But I'm not sure if I have a full new theory yet. So,
yeah. Well, great. I'm sure that in the future we'll get some more, which will be very, very fun.
Sure.
But, is there anything else you'd want to say about this episode before we wrap it up?
I just hope that I kind of want Juri's love to actually happen, but I hope the miracle happens without the power to revolutionize the world. I hope that there's like some more development, and I'm gonna say this for all of the characters because I only know these characters by a surface level. Miki, I think I have pretty much down. But the with Juri, we have a bit down there too, but some of these other characters, I hope we just continue to get some more backstory, and I hope that they get fleshed out a bit more to really care about them. And then my only prediction, will be that's when we'll finally lose someone. And that's when it will hurt the most.
Ooh.
And it better not be Choo-Choo.
We riot in the streets if it's Choo-Choo. Absolutely.
Mm.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. We're a few episodes in, but we've still got a long ways to go. So I hope you look forward to it. If you're listening after we've finished this whole podcast, binge it all. Enjoy. We've got you covered. If you're listening as we're doing it, or you haven't even watched the show, I would suggest watching the episodes and then coming back here to listen to us talk about it. So that way you can have somebody to talk to about it with in case you don't have that person in your life. That's what we're here for. Thank you to any of our sponsors. Jared, is there anything you want to plug? Anything out there? Do you want people to find you? What's going on?
If you want to find me and my hot takes that I sometimes post, you can find me at Hot Anime Vlogger on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat.
Wow. Yes. All the bases covered.
Yes.
If you want to find me, I'm at Saber_Breaker. And if you could, if you're interested in Dragon Ball, one of my other big loves of my life, check out my other podcast. That's We Got a Podcast, Dragon Ball from A to Z. Check it out. It's me and my buddy Doug talking about Dragon Ball and fighting and goofy things and all of that fun stuff.
You guys should do a fitness podcast where it's called We Got a Bod.
I like it.
It's just all related to fighting anime and being fit.
There you go.
Overcoming your insecurities inside of yourself. My Hero Academia.
Workout routines. Workout routines from Dragon Ball and why you shouldn't try to work out in 100 times Earth's gravity. That's it. That's our show. Please subscribe, tell your friends, post a review. It super helps us out. And if things are still going bad out there, get vaccinated and we'll check you later. Theme song Zettai Unmei Moko Shiroku, provided by Astrophysics. You can find their music on Bandcamp and YouTube, or follow them on Twitter at AstroSynth.